So, as we are in the nice realm here, I did reach out to a mutual acquaintance of ours.
Oh.
So Stephanie and I go back a little while. So I asked her, I was like, okay, I'm going to be talking to Brandy. Can you give me some stuff that will elicit pleasant nostalgia? So we're going to go off the top. This is what Stephanie had for us. First was two bees. Two bees.
Oh God, two bees. I'm trying to remember that.
It elicited laughter, so obviously it's there. It's ingrained in
It's
yourself.
in there. It's in there somewhere, and I think it's just like it's so far back at this point.
So I did ask for clarity. Just in
Yeah.
case.
Thank
It, she
God.
said it did relate to a streamer that was doing some form of a gold exploit while screaming two bees the entire time.
Yep. I remember that. I remember that a lot. It's so that's one of the fun sides of being a community manager is when somebody is flagrantly doing something wrong and you're like, I have to go tell on you now. Like, I'm morally obligated to go air this to the place that it needs to go. And yeah, I mean, if you think community managers aren't watching, they are. It's kind of their job.
Yeah, I
Gosh.
believe right now in the Diablo Reddit, Pez is a part of it. So spoilers have
Yeah.
been at a general minimum because people are like, oh, he's watching that. Who'd have thunk? Who'd have thunk? So I got a few more here. So first and
Okay.
foremost, we got two Bs, and then we go into and then we doubled it, which we all know.
Oh
And we had Jay on, like 2 weeks ago, but and she was referencing obviously the first community buff that you guys brought
yeah.
back and how you decided to take that upon yourself to reclaim it.
Well, so it's one of those things where like you can let something continue to be negative, or you can take it back and you can just be like, yeah, we were wrong. Let's laugh at it too. You know, don't if the community's gonna laugh at you, then find a way to laugh with them. And that's kind of where that comes from as well, because it shows humility. And it helps break down that whole dev on a silver pedestal problem that tends to happen sometimes. They don't need the ego, and we don't need the ego either. So it's better for us to just be like, yeah, we made a mistake, so let's just own it. Let's just own it and then and make it something good.
And then I have one last one. All right. So Stephanie wanted to, she made it a point, and this is where we kind of ended our conversation, was to talk about the live stream from Diablo 3 Anniversary. And you had many guests, right?
Yeah.
However, one of the guests was Kevin K. Griffin. And
Yeah.
she wanted you to know, and she wasn't sure that if you did, that that stream meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
And at the time, losing a battle with cancer, but was one of the highlights of his time there. And it meant so much to him. And we talk about having an impact not only on the community, but on your fellow peers as well. So this is your life, essentially. This is the, that's what I'm here to do, is just drop these things. And as I said,
Funny, I sit
I had some
here and cry on all
surprises.
of these. It's not just my fault. You guys spring this
Yes.
stuff on me.
No, but Stephanie spoke so highly of you. And then, again, I think we started out here today, and we're not done by no means.
Yeah.
But
Oh, for sure.
we started out by saying, the face and the voice of the community, and that comes from having an impact, and to have that impact kind of trickle outward too, is amazing, right? And you've done a lot of good things and brought joy.
I was so happy that I got to do that stream with Kevin because I didn't get to know him as well as other members of the team did. And honestly, truth be told, when I was gathering people for the streams, I didn't know what he was going through. I wasn't close enough to him to know. So it's one of those things that I get to look at in retrospective now, and really appreciate how much that meant then and how much more it means to me now, understanding the full scope of, you know, what it actually was overall. And, it made a lot of the efforts that I did later on when the team decided to put, you know, the Kanai tribute in the game. I was adamant. I was like, give me that. I need to write that. Please let me write this. And that was at least a 3-week long process before even putting pen to paper of interviewing people and just asking about the best of Kevin and all of the best memories and what do you want this article to say and what do you want to tell Kevin, you know, on the way out. And then it turned into a video series as well. And I tried to make sure that I pulled the people who I knew were going to speak so deeply from the heart about what a good person Kevin was. And all of those little things just meant so much that I got to do something of that caliber and importance that will live on forever. And that means a lot to the people who lost him. And again, like, I didn't have the same relationship that other people did, but I knew how important it was, and I knew what a good person he was. And that made all of that work more than worth it. So. I wish I brought tissues.
When I said I had a surprise, I didn't mean emotional damage. And that wasn't my goal.
I was going to say, I think anybody who's actually met me or like met me at a BlizzCon, I cry at the drop of a hat. Like, so I'm actually a very emotional human being, and which you think would make a terrible community manager, but it means that I'm really compassionate. It just makes building up that tough skin that we talked about earlier all the more important. So, but I get to enjoy the good cries that way, right? Like, this is a cry from a very good, happy, positive place.
Right.
And thank you for letting me have that.
Hey, when we got this all set up, and you know, a big shout out to everybody on Twitter who made that happen, right? I mean, obviously you had to say yes, but you know, it was Twitter. That's how things get done. But knowing, you know, some mutual contacts, I just thought, you know, what could they say? And as I said, I started with, What do you have that would elicit pleasant nostalgia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she talked on and on. So.
I love Stephanie. She's also a wonderful human being.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Liliria, for anybody out there from the old school Diablo 3 days as well. Well, this is a rough transition.
Don't worry about it.
But that's what we have. So we have the highs, right? Mm-hmm. But you also have lows. I mean, mm-hmm. And you were there for a while. I mean, what is things that stand out as failures or things that you would not want to do again?
Oh, there's two in particular that stand out to me. We'll get to the big one in a second. We all know what that one is. We'll get there in a second. But the one I want to talk about first was a personal failure that I did carry with me as a learning opportunity, which was that when we dropped the announcement for the Rise of the Necromancer pack, I had made a very smarmy comment about proving somebody wrong on the forums in response, because it was like, I don't know, a month or two earlier, like everybody internally, like we knew the Necro pack was coming. We knew that there was content coming for this game. And this was just a guy who was raging his heart out on the forums about how nobody loves Diablo and it's never getting anything. And we don't ever get anything on our game and blah, 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 blah. And we're all sitting there biting our tongue because it's like, we know we have this really cool piece of content coming and we can't talk about it yet. So like, it wasn't out of pettiness to flag this, but like I talked to my manager at the time and I said, like, hey, you know, what if we come back to this later? And we were like, by the way, here you go. Here's a necropack. And that's pretty much all it was. But it did not land correctly. It did not land in the intent. Like it meant to be kind of a playful jab of like, hey, we've been planning this all along. And it came off more like, see, this was here all along and you're just wrong and a terrible person. Obviously, none of those things are what I had said, but that is the way that it was interpreted because subtlety doesn't translate well on the internet. So, and I did. I felt really bad about it. And honestly, I turned around and I apologized immediately. I said, you know what? This was meant as a playful joke, and it came off wrong. And you have my sincerest apologies. I didn't mean to make you feel bad or single you out in that way. I wanted to celebrate this with you as a win that we are getting a cool thing in the game we both love. And yeah, I think that was something that definitely turned some people off from interacting with me. They always kind of took me there. There were a handful of people that always kind of took me going forward from that as somebody who was just disingenuous and out to be above everybody. Y'all can tell me if that's how I am, but I never really perceived myself that way. It was a one-off incident that I learned from. And unfortunately, one of the things that was kind of learned from that then as well was there are some friendships I can't have with the community. And that was one of them, you know? And it's like you have to have a long enough established relationship with somebody to be able to joke on that level. And I was still relatively young in my career at that point. So it was a good lesson for me to learn. It was very embarrassing and I carry it to this day. But you know, you have to understand like, well, what actually is my comfort level with people and what can I say? What can I say? And I think that's why some people shy away from transparency as a result is because I don't know how to articulate this better. So it's better for me to just not say anything at all. So that was one. And then there's the big one, which is that I was one of the two people at the forefront of the Diablo Immortal announcement.
Fluffy.
I was curious. I see a lot of mechanics that we've kind of been begging for in Diablo 3 in this. Is there any plans to make this playable on PC, or is this just strictly mobile forever?
Are there any? The current plan is to be on mobile, both Android and iOS. We don't have any plans at the moment to do PC. Do you guys not have phones?
Yeah, you guys all have phones, got a phone, right?
You can play on your tablet, too.
Yes, it's also on the Switch, you're right.
And I've spoken about this very candidly in a number of places, and if you want to go read the full download of it, I'll hand you the link to the blog where I outlined everything from my perspective. But kind of the long and short of it was that there was a whole lot of, like, this is just going to be one giant I told you so BlizzCon, and I have to do my best with it. And the thing that was genuinely frustrating about that was that, I mean, we knew. It's why that video came out like a month and a half before BlizzCon that was along the lines of like, fires are burning hot. Like, and the script, by the way, that I submitted for that and the script that I actually had to read out loud, not the same. Not even remotely the same as to the way it ended up by the time it was out. But it's because there are the complexities of doing that kind of announcement when you're at a company as large as Blizzard that has stockholders and that news sites track and watch every possible word they say, and that can actually impact stocks for that day. That's the level of announcement this was. And that's why I was so tied on what I could say, is because there was a direct line to financials in what I could communicate. And that is outside the realm of a community manager and what they can and can't do. That goes so high up the chain that it wasn't even at Blizzard anymore. It was at Activision. So in terms of that kind of communication, yeah, it was going to bounce around between so many people that by the time I got it back, it was unrecognizable. But it's what we had, and I was our only spokesperson. So it was my job to do. And it is what it is. Sometimes you don't get to do all the fun things. Sometimes you have to do the not so fun things. That is this part and parcel. And there were things that really, from my perspective, where it became a question was like, cool, my job at this point forward is to collect all the feedback and make it very prudently clear that it's like, hey, this is what I predicted several weeks ago. All my broadcasts, like my community sentiment broadcasts or assumptions of what was going to happen, all lined up with everything that happened. And it's like, I mean, I can show you my worth. I can show you, and I can show you that like my instincts were right on this, and going forward, maybe you should trust my instincts a little bit more in terms of where I think the community is going to want things and what their, you know, what adjustments we can make with this going forward. And what I will say is that part of that is that, you know, the major contributor to that was Wyatt. And if you ever had a chance to sit down and have story time with Wyatt, he's also a wonderful human being. Spoiler alert. I worked with a lot of wonderful human beings. And he listened to me. He listened to me very, very thoroughly. Because I think at that point forward, we were on the ship together. And so wherever it was going to go, we were going to be on it together. And you know, when on my last day, when I was going around the office saying my goodbyes, because I knew I was leaving, he cried on the way out. Because I think him and I just had such a close relationship from that experience that was both positive and negative. That, I mean, he was sad to see me go, and I was sad to stop working with him. So, but like I said, I didn't leave for any particularly ill will reason. I left because I had an amazing opportunity drop in my lap, and I had to see what was on the other side of it. So, but yeah, that was definitely the hard one. The show floor was the scariest, and part of that was just because I was alone on the show floor. So it was just me. Again, for those of you who have met me in person, I'm a very small woman. It's very easy to lose me in a crowd, and that's exactly what happened. And it was a little bit panic-inducing, and a little bit scary. So I was kind of fervently texting my thankfully very tall husband, who can see me in a crowd because he's so high up. And some of my closest friends, I think I texted you, Whitney. I think I texted Steven, you know, a couple other people that like I knew really well, and I knew that like, hey, you're probably in the crowd somewhere. Can you come help me get out of here? Because I'm worried about what may or may not happen because I don't have anybody here. My husband found me, him and a couple of friends escorted me off the show floor, and I did hide for a little while, because I needed to collect myself. You know, the rest of the weekend was going to have to be me being on, so I needed time to get that emotion out, put my barrier back up, distance myself from the situation, really like cling on to that, this is not your fault, and they're not mad at you. And talking myself through that and just kind of giving me a moment, and then going back out and doing what I do best. So, that was really hard. And I did. I went to therapy for a little while. I'm not shy to say that. I think it's actually important that we surface these kinds of things, especially for community managers, because like you said, it's hard, and you're dealing with a lot of toxicity in and out every day. And even if you have the tools that you need, sometimes need a few more. And I did. And my boss was very supportive of that, which was great. We carved out time during the workday for me to go to these sessions. Because, I mean, that was part of the experience. So it was part of my job for a while was just to take care of me, and that is something that I will forever be grateful for.
I mean, you brought it up, and I don't want to talk about Immortal.
It's fine.
No, but and you said like there's a blog, there's all that information, and there's no need to necessarily rehash it. But there mm-hmm. there is something that's kind of interesting there. I think like as a CM, like you do, and you talked about it earlier, you do push a lot of like positive stuff, and you highlight those. But as a CM, you said it yourself, you do kind of see all. So while you're pushing forward the positive, you're still taking in all of that negative. Like you're still keenly aware of it. And like, how do you how, I'm I guess how is a stupid question, right? Because like there's no I can just do X and Y, right? Mm-hmm. What does that feel like, I guess, to kind of play this guardian role of like I'm in some ways pushing forward this and keeping the community safe while I'm also keenly aware of what's behind the curtain.
So, you know, I almost think that doing a full callback to the very beginning of the episode, this is almost full circle to the fact that I started out as a paladin tank on the WoW forums, being angry about paladin tanks on the WoW forums. And I think that's part of why it was a job that I could do and that I could connect with so easily is because I understood the impetus of where people were coming from. Most of the time when somebody's angry on a forum on the internet, it's because they're very passionate about something and it's because they care. And understanding that the place that they're coming from is a place of passion already functionally changes the way that you're looking at their conversation. You're like, okay, cool. I can take a look at this. And after a while, it kind of just becomes an art of filtering out the junk and the stuff that's there just because they're feeling feels and digging into the things that they're actually trying to say, which is, this is insufficient, or this actually hurts the way I play, or the game would be more fun if I had this. And it's almost like an art of translation. And when I started looking at it that way, I was able to distance myself from the emotional part of it and really go, okay, it's fine. Come and yell at me all you want. Just make sure that you're delivering a point to me, because that I'm more than happy to take to the people who need it. And that's fine. And it really is just scraping the garbage off, tossing that away, and taking what's actually being said, what's meaningful, and getting that to the right place so that the game's better for everybody. And that, I think, is, to me, it's very fulfilling. I think it says something that I play tanks in games. Like, I really don't mind being the person getting my face smashed in for the sake of the rest of my party. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a particular mentality, but it's also kind of like just my maternal instinct of, no, I'm going to protect the people that I'm with and the people that I'm working with from this part of it, so that they can keep doing the thing they're passionate about and that they really love. And honestly, realistically, that's what the community wants, even if the way that they're saying it is very loud and full of cursing.
I can see that. I feel like I'm dominating questions here. Nineball, Muggle, what you all got?
Sorry, I cried too much.
You never have to apologize for that.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like it's a new benchmark for the podcast.
Most tears shed in a single episode.
Right. Like, we can start here, and then eventually we'll just raise the bar every couple episodes. I hope.
I think the only way that you're going to break any further benchmarks is inviting her back.
Well, I mean, she's always welcome. There are still more people I can talk to. So, you know.
I mean, yeah, I worked with a lot of people over 6.5 years.
Exactly. We can find a lot of people to say very nice things about you. And I think that's super effective.
Oh no, confidence. I'll never come back.
I think one of the telling things also is you probably would be hard pressed to find anybody to say any negative things about everything that you contributed, not just like in your role and your job and the effect that you've had at people that, you know, worked at Blizzard, but also in the community itself. You know, I remember, you know, again, you know, from the other side of the looking glass, when you left, that even people that were always like, you know, negative and anti-Blizzard and, oh, you know, she's just, you know, she's just the mouthpiece, you know, for the company or whatever, we're just kind of like, man, this sucks, you know. now we've got no one to talk to or anything like that. I think that you set a high bar for expectations for those that came afterwards. But, you know, as you said, you didn't even leave them high and dry. You set them up to succeed even after you had gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just thought that was so much more important to do, knowing that the seat was going to be vacant for a little while. Man, I mean, even after the fact, like, I was the person who launched the D4 quarterly blogs. Like, that was an initiative I pushed forward, and now I just get to enjoy the game as a fan, and that's kind of cool. Like,
it's going so well that it actually is now going to be a video blog with a sit down with the developers, and believe, you know, that they're taking like questions from the community and such in order to answer during those. So apparently it's not just, I believe it, the first one is tomorrow. My understanding is that it's going to be going forward. It will continue to be sit down with the developers, not just in a written form anymore.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a nice full circle, because I mean, that's kind of the way that I had started with the tavern talks. That was the impetus behind those, was gather questions, hard pressing questions from the community, and surface them live and show people that the dev team are actually like real people. Like, they're not just robots in a closet developing hell. Like,
it's interesting because it's like, you know, and not just with the Diablo team, but also I've heard the stories with, you know, Warcraft and other such things, is that one of the things that the devs are really candid about is because of how iterative the process is, that things change so wildly over time that they're afraid to go through and put things forward because it's very work in progress, you know, unfinalized. This might not even make it, because it's going through and seeing on the Diablo 4 side of it that, you know, when the game was announced, that like the rune words and things like that, and and then it's like that's not like a thing anymore from what we can go through and piece together. And, you know, I'm starting to see some more of those questions like on Reddit. It's like, what happened to those things? And it's just like, it's still, even if it's not something that makes launch, it's cool to see where, you know, the process went. They might be at least a little bit more open to being open. I probably could have phrased that better. You know, with some of that information and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, like, there's a part of it where there was a balance to strike. I remember when we first started surfing the idea of the blog, and part of the reason I pushed so hard for it is like, no, it is important to show people that the process is iterative. And I kind of want folks that, you know, once the game is out, that they can go back to this very first one and say, look how far it's come. Like, I think that was the line that actually made everybody go, you know what, that's actually a really good idea, is we can, you know, we can have this chronology of where the game has been and how far it's come. And that's something that I think a lot of games don't get a chance to tell that story unless they've like produced an art book or produced some kind of book that comes along with it, or you know, they produce an extremely expensive film after the fact that's like behind the scenes. Like, you know, do it early and do it in a very easy, accessible manner. And the Diablo community always loved reading blogs. So, you know, why not especially give parts of the team that rarely get to speak? Because most of the time the community just wants to hear from system design. They just want to know, like, you know, how does this class work? How does this currency work? How does, you know, what are these changes going to look like? But they never really ask things like, you know, what do the wireframes look like underneath a particular area? You know, how hard is it to model some of these things? What are the challenges that you see when you're putting together, like, you know, a sanctuary that you're supposed to be able to go through? Like, those are questions that are cool to know the answers to, but that I don't think the community is going to think about proactively asking. That was another thing that was like a mandatory for that blog, was like, no two system design blogs back to back ever. And if you do system design, whoever's paired with them needs to not be system design. And just make sure that you are highlighting parts of the team that otherwise very rarely get to be the spotlight. And it seems like that kept it too.
Yeah, no, because we had like some Diablo 4 blogs about art you know, the art design, music, sound, as a, you know, not that, you know, Mama Nick over here knows anything about in-game sounds or music.
Listen to the soundtracks, okay?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we believe you. After
you gotta level your first character with sound on, Mama.
Actually, I did.
Okay, good.
I did. Back when I started, I did start with game sounds on. I just, once I started streaming, that had to go off. I couldn't handle all of that. It was like, something's gotta go when it's gonna be game sounds.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember now, but did the Tavern Talks have any connection or like a genesis point with the Lightning Talks because that was like I remember it was the year that you guys did the Slaughtered Calf Inn at BlizzCon, mm-hmm. that they had the little Lightning Talks with a bunch of the developers, and I got to learn that the skeletons from Diablo 3 are crab legs and bamboo.
Yes. Yeah. And it wasn't a specific impetus from one or the other. I think actually the pitch for the Lightning Talks came from the D3 team itself. Mm-hmm. Because some of those devs really just, they wanted to do something cool for BlizzCon, and they didn't just want to go work the merch booth the whole weekend or be in the info booth or do setup and takedown. Because for those that don't know, BlizzCon really is a full-blown company effort. Everyone who works out of the Irvine office has to work a shift at BlizzCon. That is mandatory. And then there are some teams that work the entire weekend, like Community is one of them because they're one of the ones that help fuel the show. Events is one of them. PR is one of them. So like they're, and IT is another one that like they work the whole show for like a full week beforehand and a full week afterhand to get all those the demo stations up and everything. So there are all of, but anybody else who isn't part of one of those teams, they don't really get to do anything that is directly engaging with the audience unless they're a spokesperson. And so since those opportunities were so few and far between, I'm not even really sure exactly who pitched the idea of the Lightning Talks, but those of us in Community were like, this is awesome. How can we help you do this? What do you need? Like, how can we make sure that this is a thing that happens? And then the ones in the Slaughter Cafe were so popular that we got asked, like, you know, why aren't these online? Why can't we watch these from home? You know, I didn't get to go to BlizzCon, but I'd love to know about skeletons and crab legs. Like, you know, I want to know that too. So that was something else that I did help out with, was finding a way to get those recorded and put online. You know, what is the lowest tech, easiest way that we can do this? And we ended up finding like a literal closet to set up a stream PC and make look nice behind it. And it was just like, all right, I guess we're just going to record your PowerPoint and OBS with a little subcam and we'll be done. So, so yeah, they weren't directly connected, but like this, I think the spirit of the idea was still there.
So as we're getting close to time, we've been talking a while.
Sorry,
you leave Blizz. No, this is awesome. You know, Rush edits. He'll figure it out. So
best part about being on this podcast as opposed to my own. Thank you.
Right? You're the best, and we appreciate you. For you, bud. Yes, Brandy, you are the best too. But Rush, you're the best. We appreciate you doing this. So you leave Blizzard and you've made two stops. So where did you go once you left, and where are you now, and what are you up to?
So when I left Blizzard, it was for an opportunity at Wizards of the Coast to go be the community manager for Dungeons & Dragons. And for people who have known me for a long time, I am a gigantic D&D nerd. I've been playing tabletop most of my life. I learned to read from my dad playing the old TSR video games and sitting me in his lap and having me read combat logs. And I knew what the word melee meant at 4 years old, which is probably telling. So D&D was a very meaningful part of my life, and getting the opportunity to go be part of that community for a while was just an opportunity I couldn't pass up. And, you know, there were plenty of other reasons for me to leave Blizzard as well. I had simply just been there a long time. And some of the other opportunities I wanted to seek at Blizzard weren't panning out for me. I had been trying to potentially move into development, to move into maybe the narrative team, which is something I'm very passionate about. Help write story, help write quests and characters and things like that. Or work in VO, which is what a lot of narrative does as well, as writing the text for voice acting and things like that, which is something I also have a lot of background and experience with. I wasn't getting those opportunities, and so it was time for me to explore other avenues that might happen with. So I'm at the time, it was like early 2020. And I was told, hey, you need to move up here to Washington because, you know, offices will open back up in a few weeks. So I moved in June of 2020. And offices still did not open up. And I think I can actually count on both hands the number of times I physically went to the office in Renton. Like, it was not frequent. There was no need for me, really, because a lot of the people weren't working out of the office either. And a lot of the time I was working with community people, and D&D is a very global game. And half the people I was talking to were in Chicago or East Coast or England or, you know, any other stretch of different places. So why would I drive into the office to go be on Zoom all day when I could just do it from home? And eventually, I think what I came to figure out in my time at Wizards is that I found very quickly that I was doing a lot of the same. You know, I was being a spokesperson sometimes, I was generating content sometimes, I was generating social media reports, or I was writing the occasional blog. And I was like, I'm not really being challenged by this anymore. I've done this. I've done this a lot. And it's also not really fueling the things that I'm really passionate about. I want to write. I want to, you know, I want to use my voice. I'm very big into voiceover. It's something I want to pursue at some point in time. And I don't get those opportunities here. So I think maybe I need to figure out what's next for me. And purely through serendipitous nature, a friend of mine reached out and said, hey, we have a producer position opening up on our team. We're basically a startup and we need a narrative producer. We need somebody who understands voiceover and we need somebody who understands game design. And I was like, sounds like me. It sounds like something I've been doing a long time. So I applied to that. They love me and I'm over there now. I'm now at a studio called Firewalk Studios. We are working on our first game. TBD, can't really talk about any of that stuff as of yet, but the team that I'm on has kind of like two portions where one focuses on in-game stuff and one focuses more on the cinematic side of things. And so I get to work with some very talented people, some who come from the more like animation cinematic Hollywood style of production, and others who come from the game design side of production. And so I really get to meet in the middle of these two worlds that I know a lot about, that I have histories in. And more importantly, throughout the whole of the interview process, I kind of stressed the fact, I was like, hey, I don't want to be a producer for the rest of my life. Like, I'm happy to come in and do this as a producer. But realistically, my goal is I want to learn how to do narrative design. I would like to be a narrative designer someday. And I'd like to write. And all of them loved that answer. because it meant that it was somebody who was really going to pay attention not only to the process and procedure of things, something that I became very good at. I left workbooks at the last two jobs that I had. So
you don't say.
I know, right? I had kind of a proven experience of taking what I did, codifying it, and making it a process for everybody. And so that was why they went with me. And getting to kind of interact with both sides of that world now is phenomenal. It's a woman-dominated team, which is also very rare in the gaming industry, and especially on the narrative side of things. So that's been amazing to be a part of as well. And yeah, it's just been a very cool experience. Narrative production is very different, but also the same in some ways. Like, I'm doing a lot of translation work where it's like, oh, well, you know, this is what we want as narrative designers, but we can't have that because it doesn't work for, you know, our art director, or it doesn't work for our animators, or it doesn't work for VFX artists, or, you know, whoever it is that we're talking to. And it's just, it's a lot of the same in a different way, which is kind of interesting.
And you're happy.
And I'm happy. Yes. Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. I mean, like, there are days where it's like, it's not glamorous. I'm sitting in Jira all day putting in tasks for people, and like, here you go, have your check mark.
You're that person I hear about.
I am that
so
person,
often.
Yes. Yeah. I am that person. But I also get to, like, sit in on brainstorming sessions and help guide conversation or send on articles that are on a narrative topic that we're discussing for one of our characters or worlds or things. And that's really cool to be able to be a part of that process and also kind of be onboarded in a way that, like, I might actually be able to make that transition to narrative designer down the road. So.
Well, that's awesome.
Super awesome.
So it's interesting that, I mean, obviously, I watched you on Twitch building your D&D campaigns, right?
Yes,
so, like,
yeah.
I know you have this passion for it. And then you go and you do this job at D&D and you're like, it's the same thing I was doing at Blizzard. Not, I mean, I know you left Blizzard and there was a lot to unpack with Blizzard when you left. But do you think, even with your passion in D&D, if things had been different with Blizzard, would you have still left for D&D just because of the passion of the game? And I mean, obviously all these steps lead you to where you are now, which is
right.
Awesome, and you're happy doing it. And I mean, like I've said, I've heard you read in so many different voices, and that's what you're meant to do. But if things had been different, would you have stayed until you had landed this? Or was this switch to D&D critical to where you are now?
I do actually think the switch to D&D was critical to this path, to be honest, because I don't think it would have been in the long term for me personally healthy for me to continue being a community manager the rest of my life. And I think it was just I had gotten to a point where, you know, we loop back to the effect of toxicity and how much it can weigh on you. And it's, you know, I'm a big proponent for fighting your mental health battles and getting the help that you need and things like that. And that was one of the things I needed to do for me, was I needed to remove myself from something that I was super passionate about, that I was willing to sacrifice my own self, sense of self, and, you know, mentally allow myself to be harmed by my own actions for the most part, by letting these things continue to impact me in a way that really they shouldn't have. That I needed to remove myself from that. And I think I had just hit that point of my life where it was like, I need to move on from this as a role. And I don't think there's anything wrong with community management. There are things that could be better, certainly. There are things in the industry I would love to see change and improve and things like that. But I think I had grown beyond that and needed to put myself on a path that fulfilled me creatively a little bit more. And that was less oriented in the marketing and PR side of things that I can do, but really aren't my passion. So yeah. And I think realizing that, the thing that made me realize that was hopping to something else that I was equally passionate about, if not in some ways more passionate about. D&D has been a part of my life much longer than Diablo has. And realizing, oh, I've done this. this isn't any different. This is the same thing with a different, you know, coat of paint on it. So.
What was more impressive? I mean, the swag that you got from Wizards or the swag that you were taking home from Blizzard?
I feel like I'm telling on somebody if I answer this question. I will say I had a lot more access to swag at Blizzard than I did at D&D. In some ways, the stuff that we did at Blizzard was really crazy bonkers sometimes. Like, there's stuff there that that I never really would have gotten to dream of doing it at D&D. The budgets are also vastly different. I mean, tabletop is very different than AAA video games in terms of budget and what they have available. I got very cool things from both. I think I got the coolest, most unique stuff from Blizzard that, like, I have nothing else anything like. I say that as I'm like playing with this Horde Alliance coaster that's on my desk, like just things like that that are they just permeate my home. I didn't get a ton of that kind of stuff at Wizards. There's a couple. I have like a very unique piece of art hanging on my wall over here, of Tasha from the very first book I have my credits in, which is Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. So, but I didn't get that because of Wizards. I got that because my husband ordered the print from the artist's website. So, so there are little disparities like that. I do have like I have a badass pirate ship I got downstairs because we're a partnership with WizKids. I had, you know, I've got really cool limited edition miniatures that not a ton of people have for the same reason. I have double copies of almost every 5e book that came out in the time from when I started to when I left, because I got both the special edition covers and the standard covers. And so there's things like that. You know, you get kind of the standard release of swag. But Blizzard would do really strange, bizarre stuff for odd reasons. and those are a little bit more memorable. And some of that was I had more direct control at Blizzard over those kinds of things than I did at Wizards. So there were places
I
could
create your own swag.
I did. I got to create my own swag. I mean, like the Treasure Goblin amiibo exists because I told people it should. Like that was fun. I broke the amiibo marketplace for like 3 months because no one knew what to do with it. It was really funny.
Nice.
So, but there are things like that where I think I just had a little bit more access to creativity and honestly budget in a lot of ways there than I did at Wizards.
I was just imagining at Wizards there was like a massive corridor where you could just go and take all the miniatures that you wanted and just like like your first day, they just give you a sack and they're like, all right, well, just go and you take what you need. But that's not a
thing. Yeah, no, I mean, like, we got a heck of a starter kit. Honestly, the most dangerous is that every time a new set of magic cards would come out, there'd be a box on your desk and you're like, you're just trying to be back in. I haven't played in 8 years. I don't know.
Like, why does that sound familiar?
Yeah, long story short, I'm playing Magic again. But yeah, so there were some kind of odd, cool little things that I got from working at D&D that I definitely know other people don't have. I mean, I have one of the weirdest things I have behind me on my desk is, or on the shelves over there, is they did a Christmas gift one year that was like a studded D20 that was sent out to people. And it's like it's actually, there are actual crystals embedded in this thing. And I'm like, I mean, I'll never roll this because they're right. Just.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. It's just kind of like that's ridiculous. It's cool that I have this. I don't know what I'm gonna do with it. It's probably gonna sit in a box for the rest of its life, but
mm-hmm. But you have it, and that's what matters.
But I have it, and that's right. Cool.
Well, Nineball, Muggle. Any last questions here for Brandy before we wrap this thing up?
How's the beer collection?
Oh, Lord. Well, there will be pictures of this large. we have a.
I'm trying to convince her to ship me a couple boxes when they moved.
No, we took all of them in the back of a U-Haul and they were very tightly packed.
I know you did.
Yeah, our beer collection is extensive. It's only continued to grow because our rate of consumption has lowered, but our rate of acquisition has not. So,
it's impressive.
A lot of that, I think, was also just our beer collection continued to grow over COVID because we were used to having people come over to help us drink our beer, and then no one could come over, but we kept buying beers. So. So yeah, it's extensive. Thankfully, up here my brother is here too, and he's also a beer drinker. Him and I share the same palate, so a lot of the stuff that I buy, he can enjoy with me. So I've been taking stuff over to his place, or a lot of the friends I made at Wizards will get together now for a Magic Day for playing Commander or something. And same thing, we'll do a beer share at the same time, and that will help. But a lot of the friends we play D&D with don't drink, so we're like, okay, guess I'm just gonna have this on my own.
I would learn D&D just to drink with you, just so you know.
I mean, yeah, yeah,
sorry, I'd be down for that. So
come visit in the summer when it's not too cold for you.
I'll just tag along on one of Josh's work trips, you know.
Right?
We'll figure it out.
Come for PAX sometime.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's about that time to close the show, as we always do, with a moo, moo, moo.
Moo, 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 moo.
Moo.
Moo.